Corporation of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissension or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of Theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among Theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among Theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as Theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true Theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. There are at least 24 lodges in the world. 8 are in the United States, 3 of which are on the East Coast. All are guided by the principles contained in the 6 paragraphs of the Declaration. Yet each must choose individually how frequently it will meet to disseminate these principles of Theosophy to others. In Philadelphia, we have 2 weekly meetings, Wednesday evening and Sunday morning. Sunday morning lectures are from 11 until 12. The doors open at 10:30. Each month, we select a broad topic area to lecture on. Then we spend the entire month of Sundays expanding on some aspect of that broad topic in order to gain a better, more nuanced understanding of it. Last month, we focused on lives and legends of the saviors. For the month of May, the topic is psychism and spirituality. On the first Sunday, we discussed man's lower and higher faculties. The second lecture was mediumship and adeptship. Today's lecture will be on the rise and dangers of psychism, and we will conclude the lecture series with a talk on mental and spiritual healing. And of course, in June, we begin a new cycle or section entitled Practical Theosophy. On Wednesday evenings, the study class is from 7:30 to 8:30 p.m. The doors are open at 5:15 to allow access to the reference library. We are studying The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We've covered many areas like the constitution of man, reincarnation and karma, everyday death state cycles, and Wednesday we conclude this talk on evolution. Next Wednesday we'll be speaking on psychic forces and phenomena. The reference library is open from 5:15 to 7:15 on Wednesday evenings for those wishing to read the assignment and for those wishing to research a personal topic of interest. The book table is open before and after class for the purchase of Straight Line Theosophical materials, which may be purchased at cost. Straight Line being the Theosophical materials that are by H.P. Blavatsky, William Q. Judge, Robert Crosby, and those whose writings are consistent with theirs. At cost means that what the lodge pays for the item is what it may be purchased for. No profit is made from the sale of the wisdom religion, which is free as a gift to humanity. In addition, these items may be downloaded free from the Phoenix Lodge website. volunteers are a key component of all that is done at any of the lodges. They give of their time, money, and energies working to ensure that the Wisdom religion continues to be disseminated and available to those who want it. No effort or donation, of course, is too small. This concludes, and if anyone is interested in volunteers, please speak with the person at the book table. This concludes the announcements. Now for a reading from the voice of the Silas, beginning on page 6. Three halls, O weary pilgrim, lead to the end of toils. Three halls, O conqueror of Marwa, will bring thee through three states into the fourth, and thence into the seven worlds, the worlds of rest eternal. If thou wouldst learn their names, then hearken and remember. The name of the first hall is ignorance, avidya. It is the hall in which thou sawest the light, in which thou liveth and shall die. The name of hall the second is the hall of learning. In it thy soul will find the blossoms of life, but under every flower a serpent coiled. The name of the third hall is wisdom, beyond which stretch the shoreless waters of Akshara, the indestructible font of omniscience. If thou wouldst cross the first hall safely, let not thy mind mistake the fires of lust that burn therein for the sunlight of life. If thou wouldst cross the second safely, stop not the fragrance of its stupefying blossoms to inhale. If freed thou wouldst be from the karmic chains, seek not for thy guru in those mayavic regions. The wise ones tarry not in pleasure grounds of senses. The wise ones heed not the sweet-tongued voices of illusion. Seek for him who is to give thee birth in the hall of wisdom, the hall which lies beyond, wherein all shadows are unknown, and where the light of truth shines with unfading glory. Again, the talk for today is the rise and dangers of psychism.
Friends, psychic powers and phenomena, their cause, development, variety, and application are very important areas of study for students of theosophy. They are part of the third object of the theosophical movement, which is the investigation of the hidden psychic laws and faculties and powers in nature and man, especially the range of spiritual and psychic faculties in human beings. And why might this be so? Why is this study so important other than for the information it gives? Because it is through a knowledge and realization of the physical, psychic, and spiritual departments of man and nature that a human being gains a truer realization of the self and a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. Now, it is true that more and more scientists and individuals have become aware of the interdependence and relationship of all the kingdoms and all the departments of physical nature, even by their observations with their physical senses and instruments on this plane. But too often, the physical senses leave us with a materialistic view of life, a sense of separateness. But the more we develop and understand intellectually first, and then really through the development of psychic and spiritual faculties in time, the reality, the true interdependence, and of all of life. The real conviction of brotherhood grows even stronger. So we might say that psychism sometimes has a negative connotation, but if we consider it the pursuit of knowledge of an experience of all the departments of nature, the inner psychic and higher psychic faculties and departments of nature, it can be a good thing as well. The first glimpse into the reality of inner psychic powers and planes of being opens a door for us that cannot be shut. It's sort of crosses a gap that we cannot return from. It's almost like hearing of reincarnation and karma for the first time. It may be years before we fully accept and understand it, but once we hear it, we can't forget its notions. And it's sort of like that with an awareness and awakening. The first thing that occurs is that there's an awakening to the realization that there is more to ourselves than our physical body. There's a whole inner department of our nature with its own powers and faculties that expand beyond those of the physical and are much more reaching. It gives us a realization that there is more to this life than existence on the physical plane, that not only we have an inner nature, but nature itself around us has its own inner departments, and we are one with and in touch with that. So it gives us a further sense of connection, not only with others, but with nature itself. The glimpses into our inner psychic and soul nature make us realize that there is more opportunity for growth and experience that can be found in any one life. If the soul exists and it has powers that transcend and do not depend on the physical body, then it gives more conviction in the immortality of soul and the idea and truth of reincarnation, of lives for opportunity and growth in all ways under the law of karma. And also it ultimately makes us realize that there are more important things that need to be acquired in life besides possessions, wealth, power, fame, things that for whatever reason human beings pursue. And that's the goal for themselves, if not for those they love. But there are other things that are more important, we might say. And so this aspect of psychism is of the nature of the search for truth and wisdom. And so it is a good thing. And yet there are other aspects of psychism that we need to be aware of. There is also an aspect of psychism that is dominated by desire, lust, and passion. And here we see it in those who seek out psychic phenomena and for their curiosity and amusement. They might attend seances or psychic expositions or read all sorts of things about psychic phenomena because it's curious, it's amusing, it's something different. It gets them out of the boredom of and the ordinary aspects of life. It's sort of stimulating and exciting to the intellect. Or they seek out psychic powers, or those who have psychic powers, in order to develop them for their own personal ends or selfish ends. Maybe to make more money, to have more influence over others. But we see here that there's an aspect of psychism that is definitely dominated by desire. A third aspect of psychism that we see is that even though those people might pursue it with good motives and intentions, we'll say to perhaps contact loved relatives or gain psychic powers to heal the sick, nevertheless, when one tries to prematurely develop the use of psychic powers without knowledge of the laws involved, the effects that will ensue, the dangers involved, the responsibility that is needed. Without knowledge of this, there's also very often the possibility of great difficulty and suffering. So we know good intentions are not enough. One needs knowledge. And so in this case, psychism is dominated either by ignorance or an indifference to the responsibility and consequences, as long as one develops the faculties and can use them. So there is no doubt that as we observe our civilization, that there is a psychism, whether it's in the pursuit of truth, personal desires, or power without knowledge, is on the rise in the West, especially in America. The belief, of course, the belief in the development of the application of psychism has been prominent in the East for ages. And there are many books and volumes on it. But particularly here in the West, we notice that it's on the rise. On one hand, we see evidence of the true aspects of psychism. We see a gradual breakdown in the philosophical and materialistic denial of soul and spirit as realities. More people, even scientists and psychologists, are speaking of the reality of soul and spirit and its importance in life. We see more and more among the masses a disbelief in all but material things. People, either through meditation or contemplation or appreciation of nature in a variety of ways, realize that there are more important things that need to be acquired than just material possessions. And we see a growing rejection of materialism in conduct and action, more reaching out by people to be more inclusive of people with different orientation, different races, creed, a growing sense of brotherhood. But we cannot deny that there is also evidence of the rise of psychism of the negative sort, dominated by desire and ignorance and indifference. We see an increasing indulgence in psychic cravings, misuse and abuse of psychic powers, the use of drugs to achieve heightened states of psychic experience. An attempt to escape, either to escape the pressures and stresses of physical life or to experience senses and pleasures that for most people are overwhelming and alluring. And of course, we see an increase in the rise of psychological disturbances. So it's on the rise. And so we thought that it would be good for us to review some very important documents that we have in the theosophical literature, specifically the Five Messages to the American Theosophists from HPB. So in the late 1800s, as you may know, there were hundreds of branches of the Theosophical Society in America. It was the largest group of theosophists and branches in the world, mostly through the influence of the work of William Q. Judge. And for several years, in the late 1880s, there would be a convention of the American theosophists, and delegates and representatives of all the lodges would gather. And part of that would be an address by HPB to those theosophists. And of course, she was living in London at the time, so it was no small feat for her to travel at her age and physical condition to America to give an address to this assembly. So what she said was important for them to hear. And so we did want to read verbatim portions of the second, third, and fourth letter and make some comments along the way that help us get a deeper understanding of this rise of psychism and the dangers here. So she goes to say, as the preparation for the new cycle proceeds, as the forerunners of the new subrace make their appearance on the American continent, the psychic and occult powers in man are beginning to germinate and grow. Your position as the forerunners of the sixth subrace of the fifth root race has its own special perils as well as its special advantages. So before going any further, there's a few key phrases there that we want to look at a little more closely. She talks about preparation for the new cycle. What new cycle is she talking about? And so there are two cycles that would have been relevant for her to talk about at that time. One was in relationship to the Kali Yuga, which is, as we've studied in the past, a dark age lasting 432,000 years. It began about the time of the death of Krishna 5,000 years ago, and it is basically a time of spiritual darkness, although within it are periods of relative spiritual illumination. It's not constantly dark. And so the first cycle of 5,000 years ended towards the end of the 1800s, and she said that this would be marked by a time of transition, death blows to materialism, but also an expansion in the inquiring activity of the human mind and the development of psychic powers, particularly psychic faculties, particularly here in the West. The other cycle that coincided at that same time, and so you have the returning influence of two cycles, was the cycle relating to the zodiac. The sidereal year being one of 25,000 years as the sun moves through the ecliptic and the signs of the zodiac. We know at the end of the 1800s, it moved from the sign of Pisces to that of Aquarius, Aquarius being a sign associated with psychism or psychic development. So as the ancients and the adepts could track and predict and know when there would be changes in the affairs and capacities with human beings under cyclic law, they could use these cosmic cycles as indicators, as clocks, as when certain influences would return. And so this was such a time. The other thing we notice, he says that also as the forerunners of the new subrace, your position as the forerunners of the sixth subrace of the fifth root race. So once again, we know that in the larger perspective of development of humanity, physically, psychically, mentally, spiritually, it will go through various stages, several developments of humanity called in their broadest sense, root races. But within each root races, there are seven sub-races or variations or developments. And so we are currently in the fifth root race when the fifth principle or mind is beginning to develop more. We are also in the fifth subrace now. So once again, the development of mind. But she says that we in America are the forerunners are of the sixth subrace. So each subrace has its appearance and development in a certain area of the world. And it is said to be in America or the Americas where this sixth subrace will develop. And physically, it will be a blending of the races of all of humanity, a sort of melting pot, so that all have the benefit of the experience and development of others. But also there will be a coming to the fore of this sixth subrace of the psychic faculties and powers. And she warns that it would be in both aspects, in a higher and a lower. So that's what she's referring to. Now, a third phrase there, special perils as well as its special advantages. So what are the advantages first of being at this particular time when in this cycle, in this forerunning of the sixth subrace, it is said that this will be a time for the further development of the mind, a freedom of thought, a vitality of thought that challenges and tears down and questions old institutions and searches for new ones. We don't see the passivity and blind acceptance of authority as we do in other areas of the world. But there is a freedom of spirit, of thought, that is not the result of our Constitution or Declaration of Independence. Rather, it is the other way around. It is the inner thought and freedom of spirit that produced that document and sustains that document for as long as that freedom and spirit exists. So we see that rise. And we also see, of course, the psychic nature developing. And that can be an advantage, as we said. Those things are important to our spiritual understanding. But there are also perils involved, and we'll get to those in a moment. So in another phrase, in another message, she said, psychism, with all its allurements and all its dangers, is necessarily developing among you, and you must beware lest the psychic outruns the monastic and spiritual development. And so what does she mean by the psychic outrunning the monastic and spiritual development? So we study in Theosophy that the human being is a sevenfold being. We have a higher immortal, a spiritual nature, spirit, soul, and mind, or Atma Buddhi Manas, mind being the thinking principle, the real thinking being, ego, that we are independent of this physical body, the being that incarnates from life to life. And we have a lower nature, a physical nature, vitality, astral and passionate nature. And psychism, really the powers and faculties of psychism, whether they particularly in their lower manifestations, depend on the use of the faculties and powers of our desire principle and our astral body and its faculties. And so what she is saying here is that in this particular time, those aspects of our nature are going to come to the fore, particularly the lower psychic. And unless we are careful, their development will outrun our spiritual development and our proper mind development, because evolution is a threefold process for humanity. It's not just spiritual mental and psychic, but it's also physical. And so there needs to be a balance. The development of the mind and our spiritual nature to balance and correct these psychic tendencies. And she says that psychic capacities held perfectly under control, checked and directed by the monastic principle, are valuable aids to development. But these capabilities running riot, controlling instead of controlled, using instead of being used, lead the student into the most dangerous delusions and certainty of moral destruction. Watch therefore carefully this development inevitably in your race and evolution period, so that it may finally work for good and not for evil. And so we know that the key to developing the spiritual nature for us is the development of thorough altruism, work for the benefit of the others, development of an inner sense of selflessness, or at least at the beginning, unselfishness of our motive, and going along with that, a universality of thought, developing an understanding of those universal principles which not only give us a sense of oneness and interconnectedness with life, but help us understand the various mysteries of our own being and life itself. And certainly the ability to view these psychic faculties from above. Because in life we can either at all times choose to act either from the basis of principles or from the basis of our desires and senses. And so we hopefully as human beings want to develop to operate from principles and a feeling of compassion, be true human beings. So what are some of these allurements and dangers that she speaks of that we will have to face along the way? And we were thinking that kind of a negative thing to talk about, allurements and dangers, but let's say you are inviting some friends and family over to your house for the weekend, and perhaps it was a farm or a ranch or even a house in the neighborhood anywhere. The first thing you would tell them, being that you were concerned about them and didn't want them to get hurt, is you might warn them about some loose tiles or creaky rails or maybe some areas in the yard that they might want to avoid because it's maybe there's some holes there. In other words, you would let them know that you have a good time, you know, enjoy yourselves, but there are literally some pitfalls here that you want to watch out for. And so we want to take it in that spirit. There's good things about this pursuit and development of this knowledge, but there's also some pitfalls along the way. And so we want to approach it with knowledge and avoid the pitfalls by avoiding certain things. And so in all cases where psychic powers are developed prematurely, and by that we mean not as the result of natural development. Naturally, we are developing it as a race at this time in our evolution. But for those who try to speed up the process, it can only be done in one or two ways. And that is with a guide who understands those laws and processes. And even there's long periods of probation and discipline involved, a purity development of the desire nature and the thought nature. So in the forceful development of these psychic and various inner powers, they will not be misused or abused out of ignorance. That's one way. The other way, as we said, is just to develop them for out of curiosity or personal power. And in those cases, they are all developed by the exercise of mental passivity. In other words, putting aside the influence of the physical senses, quieting and making the mind blank, and opening up our perception or reception to whatever comes from within. And that practice, once continued, also opens the door. But rather than opening the door to the higher spiritual knowledge, which comes through the right training, it opens the door to our lower psychic nature, the astral plane and our astral nature. And that is the home, the storehouse of all our lower tendencies and impressions individually, and the lower impressions and intentions of humanity. It is sort of a mirror that reflects back to us our lowest impressions. But also there exist forces and intelligences on that plane that are harmful to the nature of the human being. So when we open the door, those influences come in. And once the door is open, just like the door of realization can't be shut, the door of passivity can't be shut either. And so the psychic senses can be experienced. We can experience impressions from our psychic senses in an uncontrolled fashion, and they are deceptive. The psychic plane has a way of distorting things, turning things around. There are various levels to the psychic nature, and most people who delve into it don't get the complete perspective. Just like a specialist in one area does not have the knowledge of a specialist in another, and so they can be misled. Those lowest impressions, being attracted to the lowest personal, selfish, sensual part of our nature, inflame our desires and passions. And therefore, we know when those desires and passions get too inflamed, we can be more destructive and harmful to ourselves as well as to others. And this can be in all areas of our life. So we have the deception that comes, we have the mental passivity that comes, and the psychic vulnerability and the inflammation of the desires, which can actually lead to a physical ruin of our health. So beware. That's the warning. And it is a warning, incidentally, that one will really only honestly hear in theosophy. And it makes one wonder. You know, when we listen to a salesperson and we only hear the good things about the product, we might go, well, what are they hiding? And even now, you know, when the pharmaceutical companies have to advertise a drug, they always have to run through the side effects on there as well. And all that. So when we hear people speak glowingly of the development of psychic powers, what are they hiding, or what don't they know? And why are they expounding on it? And why are they charging money for it? All these questions come up. So it's in theosophy where you get a knowledge of not only what to do, but what not to do. You learn about the highest parts of nature, in our nature, and the lowest, because that's what wisdom includes. It's knowledge of the self, knowledge of the all-inclusive understanding of nature in its fullness. And it's only with that knowledge first that we can begin to make choices with knowledge and responsibility as to how we want to evolve. So we'll start here and invite your contributions and questions on this broad subject of psychism, its rise and dangers. Yes?
Beware. When we hear that word, we usually interpret it as run the other way, be afraid. And it really comes from be aware, which is what theosophy wants of you. And a number of years ago, a student gave from the platform the best example of why we should be studying the subject and making true constructive ideas for ourselves. And that was, if you were going to a foreign country and you were going to spend a good deal of time traveling there, wouldn't you, before you ever booked the flight, wouldn't you study something about that country, about the money, about the culture, about the way people lived and acted, and maybe even some of the language? You wouldn't just go over there. So we think that's a great example of the kind of thing we have to do. We have to assume it's a foreign country and learn about it.
Mm-hmm. And while your contribution is true, how often do we see people do just that? They want to have a good time, they don't think about it, and they just go without that preparation and knowledge. And hopefully they're lucky, but very often that ignorance can lead to a lot of problems. And even if they run into problems, if they have that knowledge, they're able to get out of it easier and avoid the worst possible consequences. So it's the same thing. The development of the psychic faculties is like going to a foreign country. It's a land or a state of being and nature which is foreign, which is different from our ordinary physical everyday experience. It has its own laws. It has its own rules. You may even say it has its own police force and its own influence, and so a culture, if we would speak to, and language and symbolism. So we are really blind travelers if we try to explore there. So when we make it part of the third object to investigate, that's exactly what we're doing. We may not choose to go there. We may realize that we're not ready. That's not what we want. We got enough to do here, right and now, in this country, in this land, in our own homes. We don't want to go there. But at least we know, we're familiar with the reality of that other country. We can study it from a distance. We can watch YouTubes on it. We can read about it in books. But we don't have to go there because we understand. We learned all those things that we just talked about. We understand. And realize that at some point it might be necessary under duty or opportunity to go there, but at least we're prepared. Yes?
If someone is just born with natural psychic powers, whatever they are, whether simple or huge, does that give them just the right to use them, and can they trust them?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the thing, that very often people are born with natural psychic abilities. It may be a member of our family we recognize, or we may read a book about somebody or see a documentary about somebody. We've even heard of some examples of people who've suffered electrocution or some type of brain trauma and seem to wake out of it and have abilities that they didn't have, all sorts of phenomena. But when we speak of that, we wanted to keep in mind that there's only two ways to develop psychic faculties prematurely. And that is, we've had to develop it with knowledge and training or through passivity. That does not mean we did it in this life. We could have done it in a previous life or lives. And what we bring with us is the tendency or the ability, not the knowledge or but the tendency, the ability, just like any other faculty or talents, to exercise it. And what happens when people have it, a few things happen. They may come into a family where they might feel a little bit awkward, repressed about talking about it, because those particular folks don't really believe in it or try to suppress it, so it's kept a secret. Or maybe they just use it personally and in their interactions with others, but they generally keep quiet about it. There's those that come in and believe it's a gift from God, and because that's what they're taught in their family, and so they may use it in that way with the best of motives, try to help others, try to be of service. They just want to love and take care of others with this gift and grace of God, and they don't charge it, and they are natural healers and leave it at that. But there are also those that have the ability and try to exploit it for financial gain and process and development. And of course, that's to be avoided. So what are they to do? Well, even so, there's the vulnerability to the dangers, even though it's naturally acquired. So one should try to get knowledge, but if they don't get the knowledge, at least do it with the best of motives and don't charge money for it. Do it freely. Yes?
HPB spoke of the dangers of psychism early on after she investigated it. And Harry Houdini also exposed fraudulent psychics, and that was well known for that. Is there anybody out there, except for Theosophies in today's world, that we know of, that's warning about the dangers of psychism? Except, well, we're just wondering if there's, like, it just seems like it's all one-sided, and we don't really hear about the dangers of it in everyday life.
No, we don't. We don't really, unless they're familiar with Theosophical literature and they're talking about it but not giving credit to Theosophical sources. We don't usually hear people either in the universities where they're just beginning to investigate it, or nor do we hear it from skeptics. Skeptics may say that it's false, it's unreliable, it's not really true, but they don't talk about its dangers. And we don't hear it from the advocates. So we only hear about it from Theosophy. But when we say that, Theosophy tells us why, but also points out throughout the ages that wise human beings have always pointed to the dangers and risks involved in its exercise and development. So it's not just Theosophy, it's the wisdom of the ages on this matter. Yes?
One observation is that whenever we have come across a medium such as a fortune teller, they live in the community, and you see them often, you see drastic changes in them, and you see a very dark side come out, and see how it affects the entire family. And so, you know, it's evident now. Other than people of a religious bend having any warning against that kind of activity.
Yes. Well, the observation was that one can observe among mediums, if they get to know them long enough and well enough, that there can be gradually a deterioration in their morality and physical health and well-being. And once again, think of the analogy of opening the door. Now, you may have the best intentions in the world of opening the door during a thunderstorm. Maybe it's to let somebody in who's out in the cold. You may have the best intentions. But if once you open that door, if you can't get it closed, all those forces rush in. And it's maybe a good analogy to think of as all those psychic forces can't get into our nature because of the way we are physically constituted. Now what's happening is HPB is gradually, as we are developing more and more abilities to direct these psychic energies and faculties, and so they are coming more and more in the race. But of course they can be abused and misused as well. So once that door is open, all those forces can come in, and you know, if it's a hurricane, it'll destroy the furniture and break the glass. So think of the effect of all those negative psychic forces, energies, impressions rushing into our nature, the effect they have on our sensitive nervous system, the sensitive balance of our hormones. And you know, if you can go out in a normal, you know, harsh conditions and be weakened by it physically, think of the dangers that come to the human being when they're repetitively and uncontrollably, they can't even put on a coat to protect themselves because they don't know how these forces and impressions come in and affect them and disturb them psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, morally, physically, in all ways. And so, as you're saying, depending on their stamina, their resistive power, they can only hold out so long. And so we don't want to begin to go down that path. We'll take another question. Yes.
As we grew up, we heard the term psychic, spiritualism, etc. And we just hear the term, no description whatsoever, until we learn something like, mind your business. Think about what is taking place and practice thinking. Feeling can sort of make things different. So the terminology that we hear, psychic, we think leaves a lot of blank spaces. So a description of what you mean by sight, etc., would help.
Well, psychism in its broadest sense relates to powers and faculties of the soul. Once we acknowledge that we are not only have a soul, but what we are souls, soul beings, then there must be powers, faculties, and responsibilities of that soul. Now, the thing is that our psychic nature runs a full range from the very lowest to the very highest. And in a previous week, we had a discussion, a talk on the higher and lower psychic faculties. Some of them are definitely to be developed and others to be avoided, developed at this time for humanity in general. Yes.
Well. The idea of protecting ourselves from these influences harkens back to the beginning where you said the age of Kali Yuga began 5,000 years ago. And we have a document written at that time called the Bhagavad Gita. Now, it would seem as if that is a message to the race of how to overcome these psychic influences. So would that be a true observation? Is that a guide for us to
live? We have two guides in the devotional books. One is the Bhagavad Gita. Now, in reading the Bhagavad Gita, we'll see several references to the senses, how they need to be controlled, their activity, that they move towards their appropriate objects, that the senses can lead us astray, that we need to gain discipline and control over the senses. But if we understand that not just to mean the physical senses, but the psychic senses, then all those moral and philosophical lessons will be perfectly applicable to us in protecting ourselves from those influences. The other very good book we have, we read from today, The Voice of the Silence. And in the introduction to that book, it speaks of how in the East there are numberless schools of psychic development, but this book is part of that wisdom that belongs to the same source as the secret doctrine. It is the path of higher psychic development taught by the masters and the adepts. And we read in the very first opening, the opening words of that text, these instructions are for those who are ignorant of the dangers of the lower iddhi, the lower psychic powers. And then that whole first fragment goes on to how to go through life, perform our duties, and not be distracted by these lower psychic phenomena. And so it also is a very good guide for us to use. You had another follow-up? Yes.
Just a question. we associate, well, there was a couple of questions, you know, in the first reading and the from the voice, who said the second hall, which apparently this is all in reference to, under every blossom a serpent coiled. And we always wonder, we always thought that on the negative term, but isn't it also on a serpent of wisdom, or is it the serpent of desire in our lower nature?
Yes. Well, under every blossom a serpent coiled. And speaking of that hall of wisdom, which is necessary for our probation, we're told refers to the astral regions. And it's a blossom, it's alluring for the reasons mentioned. It opens up vistas to us we hadn't realized existed, expands our awareness. So it's an alluring, it invites us to explore, it makes us curious. But on the other hand, there is a serpent coiled there. The astral influences that can distort, that can give us false impressions, reflect things back in a reverse manner, reflect back on us the lowest impressions. There are certain forces in that realm which are inimical to humanity. And so there's a danger there. So the serpent itself being a dual symbol, reflecting both the astral nature and also the divine wisdom. The serpent has always had that dual connotation, representing spiritual knowledge and wisdom, but also our lowest psychic nature. In fact, the serpent, we might say, represents our soul in its full psychic range from higher to lower. You had your hand up?
Well, we were thinking, based on the earlier remark, does anyone else teach one to be nervous or concerned or back away from psychism? But the opposite seems to be true. You can see advertisements throughout the year with very, very famous speakers on spiritual things. And part of that program will have to do with the development of psychic powers. It's what people want.
Mm-hmm. It's what people want because there's a rising awareness, remember the rise of its reality and its advantages and its allurements. And so there's an appetite for it. And where there's an appetite, there's a market, and there's people that will encourage that market and charge money for it. So yes, we definitely see that. As a matter of fact, when HPB first taught, her first mission, you might say, was to stem the tide of spiritualism, but point out what was really going on there and its reality, but also to point out the dangers. And it was in her very effort to point out the dangers and the misconceptions there that the spiritualists turned against her. And so she had to focus in other areas. There was a hand up. Oh, yes.
We know a few spiritualists that they attend a church of like-minded people, and for protection they form a circle and say things of a positive nature for protection. Now, we understand that, but is that what we should do too? I mean, not in a group perhaps, but individually to form that
protection?
Well,
a circle is not a protection. It's a linking. It's a joining together. And so that means what influences one influences all more dramatically. And so if one is affected harmfully by those inner forces, it's immediately going to affect the others. So drawing into a circle is no protection unless one knows with knowledge and force and wisdom what to do. So certainly a gathering of like-minded folks directed in a certain way towards spiritual growth and development are linked together, become a stronger force for good and protection than operating individually. But just forming a circle does not ensure that. So we'll take one more comment really quick. Yes.
Well, just that we are told that the real protection comes from within ourselves.
Yes.
And if we've been tinkering or something to stop it and seek out spiritual wisdom.
Yes. So the real protection comes from within in two ways. One as an intuition or warning, meaning that we've dabbled in the past and something in our higher nature is warning us to stay away. The other protection from within that comes is having a good heart and good motive in what we do. That will protect one in some ways. But as we said, even good motive is not necessarily enough. We have to learn to listen to the voice of our own spiritual consciousness and discernment. And that takes some doing. So we'll stop here for now and invite you next week, where we're going to continue on this subject of psychic powers, but focus more on mental and spiritual healing. Our meeting is adjourned.